The sermonette this morning, to start it off, I'd like to quote from an old Negro spiritual. It goes, "My Lord, what a morning when the stars begin to fall. You will hear a shout of victory when the stars begin to fall." Wonderful words, actually, brethren, when we know what they mean. And in a few days' time, we're going to be celebrating the Feast of Trumpets. And the Feast of Trumpets is a very special day. And the Feast of Trumpets pictures many things. One thing, it is one of the most pivotal days in all eternity, if you think about it. One of the most pivotal days of all eternity. At the end of man's rule on this world, on this earth, and the time of the return of Jesus Christ to this world. What a wonderful thing to look forward to. And also, brethren, the time of one of the resurrections, the first resurrection. That's what I'd like to talk about today. I'd like to give you a brief outline of the benefits of having a place in the first resurrection. So again, what a morning, the song goes. We're not sure what time of day it will be when Jesus Christ returns and when we rise to meet Jesus Christ in the air. I would think that probably rather than in the morning, it will be around sunset, beginning the Feast of Trumpets. But what a day, anyway, that will be. And what an incredibly fantastic event that we will be blessed to be able to witness firsthand, and not only witness it, but to have a part in it, to have a part in the first resurrection. Blessed? Is it really a blessing to have a part in God's church in this end time? Is it a blessing to have a part in the first resurrection? Well, you bet it is. But surprisingly, there are some who don't think so. You say, well, surely not Church of God members. Well, yes. Have you ever heard people, and I've heard people saying, fellow members of the church complaining that they were called in this life. I've heard fellow church members wishing that they'd been called in the second resurrection rather than in the first resurrection. I've heard members of the church saying that they're not willing to endure the trials and the overcoming that are an automatic part of membership in God's church. And I've heard fellow members grumbling that they would rather spend their life enjoying trouble-free, stress-free times of a life of relative ease. I've heard people saying things like that, and you probably have too. But what's worse, there are some of our members, brethren, that have succumbed to these feelings and these desires, and have taken the fatal step, and they have given up their calling. Now, I'm not talking about members who've moved from one branch of the church to another, or people that have gone independent or that kind of thing. But rather, I'm talking about those who've given it all up, given it up entirely, completely left the Church of God. Now, I'm not the great judge. I'm not the judge of these things, and neither are you. We have a judge, the great merciful God of love, and he is the judge, and only he can say what the future holds for those people. For some of those brethren who've given up perhaps early in their calling, I think of them as like the soil in the parable where God's spiritual seed fell on the soil, but they were the soil on the wayside or on the rock or among thorns. And hopefully that they have not lost their salvation permanently. But again, only God knows that. But one thing is for certain. Those people who've left the church, if they don't come back to the fold, and if they don't come by a specific time, whatever that time set by God, but even if they have not lost their salvation, they will have lost something very, very special. And that is the part in the first resurrection. Now, amazingly enough, you may not believe it, but it seems like Job had a bit of a bad example when he was going through his trial along these lines. He harbored some of these feelings when he was going through his major trials. Please turn to Job chapter 14. Job chapter 14. And verses 10 to 15. Verse 10. But man dies and is laid away. Indeed, he breathes his last, and where is he? As water disappears from the sea, and a river becomes parched and dries up, so man lies down and does not rise. Till the heavens are no more, they will not awake nor be roused from their sleep. Oh, that you would hide me, Job says, in the grave, that you would conceal me until your wrath is past, that you would appoint me a set time and remember me. If a man dies, shall he live again? All the days of my hard service I will wait till my change comes. You shall call, and I will answer you. You shall desire the work of your hands. So Job asked the same questions that every thinking human being asks at least once in his life. What is death? What happens to man after death? And Job, for sure, had some of the right answers. I think he knew all of the right answers, but he only said some of them here. Man does not have an immortal soul. Once he dies, he would remain dead forever if God did not have other plans for him. So the majority of the dead will remain in their graves until the time of the second resurrection, which will be at the end of Christ's 1,000-year reign on the earth, the time that we call the millennium. But in these verses that we just quoted, it seems that Job had some preference for a place in the second resurrection. He asked God to leave him in the grave until after the apparent flight of the heavens, after the wrath of God was expended. But Job was an obedient man. He was very loyal to God. And he and all of the others of his who are obedient and loyal to God, he will be included in the group that Jesus called the elect. And they'll come up in the first resurrection at the beginning of the millennium. Job will be raised from his resting place with many others, and will meet Jesus Christ in the air, and he'll witness both of these great events. He'll witness the wrath of God. He'll witness the flight of the heavens, which will be sadly necessary, times that will sadly be necessary to bring the rebellious people of our nations into subjection to God's happy way of life. But again, we've heard fellow church members, and especially those under trial, with similar wishes to Job. I wish I hadn't been called in this life. I would have been better off if God hadn't called me until the second resurrection. Those kind of wishes. But if you think about it, brethren, non-membership in God's church certainly does not guarantee a trouble-free, a stress-free life of ease. All you got to do is think about some of your friends who are not in the church, and relations, relatives who are not in the church. Are they truly free of stress and troubles? I don't think so. So are there very real benefits to having a part in the first resurrection? If so, what are they? Is there really any reason to desire a place in the first resurrection? Well, the Apostle John, inspired by God, definitely thought so. Please turn to Revelation chapter 20. Revelation chapter 20. And verse 4. And I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was committed to them. Then I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded for their witness to Jesus and for the word of God, who had not worshipped the beast or his image, and had not received his mark on their foreheads or on their hands, and they lived and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. Verse 5, but the rest of the dead did not live again until 1,000 years were finished. That's the second resurrection. And then it says, this is the first resurrection. It's talking about verse 4. In verse 6, blessed and holy is he who has part in the first resurrection. Over such, the second death has no power, but they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and they shall reign with him 1,000 years. So through the Apostle John, God gives us part of the answer. He gives us a partial list here of the benefits for having a part in the first resurrection. The first one is that death will no longer have power over us, and that's a great thing. Specifically the second death, but we'll have made it, brethren. We'll have made it by that time. And the second one is that God, at that time, in the first resurrection, we'll have a guarantee of being alive during the millennium, during that fabulous transitional time when the world is improved and the world is rebuilt. And the third one, after we've been crowned kings and priests and co-rulers with Jesus Christ, that we will have a part in helping in that rebuilding program, rebuilding a terribly broken world. So we need to keep our vision of that very special crown that's reserved for those who will be in the first resurrection. A very special crown. We need to value it. And they're just a few of the wonderful blessings that we can have for having a part in the first resurrection. There are more mentioned elsewhere. Don't have time for them today. But in closing, please turn to Revelation chapter 2. Revelation chapter 2. In verse 11, Revelation chapter 2 and verse 11. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death. He's talking about the same thing, overcoming, so that we can have a part in the first resurrection and that we can be protected from the second death. But rather than being in the second death, suffering the second death, he who overcomes will have a part in the wonderful first resurrection. Just over the page in Revelation chapter 3 and verse 11. Revelation chapter 3 and verse 11. Behold, I am coming quickly. Hold fast what you have, that no one may take your crown. What a crown that will be, brethren. That special crown that is reserved for those who have a part in the first resurrection. What a crown. It will be worth the effort. It will be worth the overcoming and the holding on. Please hold on to it. Please hold it fast.